So for right now, I'll have Mr. Lencheski take the role, please.
Members, you can now unmute yourselves while the roll is taken. Representative Fooley.
Present.
Representative Fooley, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Present. Have to unmute.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje?
Yes, present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg?
Present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids?
Present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Frankie?
Present.
Representative Keith Frankie, present. Representative Mike Freiberg?
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen?
Present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt?
Present.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Representative Leon Lilly?
Present.
Representative Leon Lilly, present. Representative Eric Lucero.
Ready to serve.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Here.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
Here.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang. Representative Jay Zhang. Members, with the conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Lencheski. And for Joe, please monitor for any members that were not here to take the roll. Please let us know when they do come in. And I just want to welcome all of you to the 2021-22 Capital Investment Committee. Today, we're going to do some introductions first before we do have staff provide an overview of our committee for the newer members. And for everyone, as we do introduction, please let me know and all of us know if you have served on the committee before and one thing that you're looking forward to this for this year. And so I'll start. Representative Fooley from House District 59A in Minneapolis. This is my second time serving on capital investment, first as the vice chair to Chair Mary Murphy. I'm really looking forward to having some conversation around how could we make more equitable investment in the state of Minnesota. Last year, we saw that in some of the projects that were funded through the October capital investment bill. And so I really believe that we could do more of that. And so I look forward to having that engagement this year. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Vice Chair Mary Murphy.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year, everyone. I represent parts of St. Louis and Lake County. I have four school districts, I have four cities, I have townships, and I have about 30 miles of Lake Superior coastline. So it goes around Duluth, but I do have two precincts in Duluth, precinct 11 and 23. And so it's a geographically diverse district in two counties. Lake and St. Louis, as I mentioned. One of the things that I would like to see us continue or have discussions on was what was cut to the quick kind of, we were just starting to establish rules or criteria for projects throughout the state of Minnesota. I believe strongly that our projects should connect regions of the state to each other, and that projects should have regional significance, and that Department of Revenue, the governor, Department of MMB, budget management, and the legislature, the House and the Senate should have the same criteria for projects so that the people of Minnesota have an understanding of what they're applying for their millions and millions of dollars. And I think there are still great needs that have not been, that were not met in the October bill. And the bill that actually had its genesis in 2 years. We started out in 2019 and we continued in 2020, and we worked very hard to get that infrastructure bill that finally did pass, and we can be proud of that bill. And I expect, Chair Lee, that you are going to take us into the future far, far more with the capital event, capital investment infrastructure bill than we have ever gone before. So that is your challenge and our challenge working together. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Mary Murphy. And next we have Lead Dean Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is my my 16th year on the Capital Investment Committee. I served 2 years as chair previously, and have been the lead the last session and now this session. I represent District 18A, which includes all of Meeker County, including the city of Litchfield, and of course the city of Darwin, which has the biggest ball of twine made by one man. Also, three townships in McLeod County, including half the city of Hutchinson, and then one township in Wright County, which is the city of Cokato. One of the real joys in being on this committee is getting to know the state. We on this committee are privileged to learn more than really any other committees. We'll have firsthand knowledge of much of our areas, the projects, the needs the state has because of the testimony that we get and because of the traveling that we do. And so I'm hoping once again to have a very successful term where we are learning more about the state of Minnesota and their particular needs in particular places and working together. And this committee does have to work together more than any other committee, mainly because votes from both parties, both caucuses are needed in order to actually get a bill done. And so we do work together. And in that spirit, and I mentioned this to the chair earlier, you know, I'm prepared to, for the purposes of this committee, drop my last name and go by my middle name. So then we could be Dean Lee and Fu Lee working together in bonding brotherhood. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I really appreciate that. And now we'll go in alphabetical order. First, we have Representative Abaje.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Esther Agbaje. I am the representative for House District 59B, which covers all of downtown Minneapolis and parts of North Minneapolis. I'm a new member this year, so I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to serve on this committee. I understand that it is one where there's got to be a lot of collaboration to make sure that we are addressing the needs of everyone in Minnesota. So I look forward to those conversations. I look forward to making sure that we're lifting up voices who normally aren't heard in these spaces. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abadjie. Next, we'll go to Representative Berg.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kayla Berg. This is the first term that I'm serving, representing Burnsville in a small corner of Lakeville, and I'm really excited to be on this committee. Looking forward to Chair Lee's leadership and having the values of equity and justice be a big part of what's driving the work that we'll do in this committee. And I'm really excited to see what we can do together to uplift working families across the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berg. So next we have Representative Davids.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, Greg Davids here. I represent District 28B in southeastern Minnesota, which borders Iowa and Wisconsin. So I'm about as far southeast as you can get. Looking forward to serving on the committee. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Next, we got Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith Frankie, District 54A, Cottage Grove, St. Paul Park, Newport, Great Cloud Island Township, and parts of the city of South St. Paul. This is my second time on this committee. It's a great committee. Get to learn a lot about the entire state and the needs all throughout it. So I'm excited to be here, excited to work with you all. So thanks for having me, appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Frankie. Next we have Representative Freiberg.
Hi, Mike Freiberg, represent all or parts of Crystal, Golden Valley, New Hope, and Robbinsdale. I'm in my fifth term, but this is my first term on the Capital Investment Committee, and I am really looking forward to it.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Next, we have Representative Hansen.
Thank you. I'm Rick Hansen. I represent 52A, which is South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, and Lilydale. And I have been on the Capital Investment Committee as long as I have been in the legislature, so since 2005, I think the same length of time as Representative Lilly. So pleased to be here. I think we can do some great things this year, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Next, we have Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and hello, everybody. I'm John Hewitt. I represent Rosemount and Apple Valley, which many of you are familiar with because it has a Minnesota Zoo in it, which we worked together real close with the committee last year, and I thank you very much for all the work you did on that. And from afar, I've always, in the last 2 years, I've watched this committee, and I was really impressed with how everybody worked across the aisle with Representative Erdahl. And I mean, he even came to me as a non-member of the committee to talk to me about my project. So I was really impressed with that, and I think that's really cool. So I'm looking forward to working with the committee, second termer, but first time on the committee. And Representative Erdahl, I'm probably more interested in looking at your civics bill than I ever have before, but that's a different committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Next, we have Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. I'm Representative Leon Lilly. I represent Oakdale and Maplewood and all of North St. Paul. North St. Paul is actually a city, right, Representative Ryer? I think people think it's part of St. Paul, but we're actually a city out there. But one of the things I've been lucky enough to be on this committee a few rounds, and I just love it. Not as long as Representative Hansen, but I just think it's super neat to be able to see the state. I'm curious how we're able to do that, but I know we will. We'll figure out a way in this COVID world. It's been a pleasure to serve under when Erdahl was Representative Erdahl was the chair, and certainly with Representative Murphy. And I just we went from one end of the state to the other and all over, and just saw neat things. You learned super interesting things to me. I didn't know that, you think of Minnesota and all our lakes, but we had to pipe in water in Minnesota and southern Minnesota, a couple of years ago. And then I didn't even know what a ring dike was, until I served on this committee. But it's really neat, and we're in a great position to help Minnesota, and I know that we will under this team. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Next, we have Representative Lucero.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for everybody's background and their experience on this committee. This is my fourth term, but this is my first time serving on this committee. I'm really looking forward to it. Representative Lilly, back when I was a truck driver, I used to drive through. One of my stops was North St. Paul, so I know the snowman. In fact, I remember before that it was an overpass. It was an intersection there, a four-way intersection. So I am looking forward to learning more about Minnesota, learning about the needs, learning about, as Chair Murphy had explained, the regional significance and how we can use our influence, how we can use our collaboration and cooperation to benefit Minnesotans across the state with the various and diverse needs. One note I should say, I am looking forward to the trip. My understanding is touring on a bus and a week long and then staying in. I'm not exactly sure what the sleeping arrangements are, but if we are sharing rooms like we did at first term member orientation, since I've lost 60 pounds, I don't snore anymore. So whoever I might be bunking with, if we're sharing rooms, that'll be a benefit. So anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking forward to the great conversations this term.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. I wish, I hope that we will be able to, go throughout the state of Minnesota to tour again this upcoming summer and fall. And we know we will not be bunking together. You'll get your own rooms that will be reimbursed by the committee.
Good idea.
Next, we have Representative Moran.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rena Moran. I represent District 65A in St. Paul. And some of those neighborhoods are the Midway area, Frogtown, the historical Rondo community, a little part of the North End, and a small portion of Cathedral Hill. I'm in my sixth term in the legislature, and this is my first term on the Capital Investment Committee. I am excited about being on a Capital Investment Committee. One, because we're talking a lot about traveling across the state and exploring the state. It is a pandemic, so that's going to be different about what that looks like and how we do that, or if we do that, because we need to make sure that we do that safely. But it is an interesting part of what the Capital Investment Committee does. I'm also interested in maybe diving a little bit deeper into the structural part of the capital investment, looking at the policies that created the practices around how we fund institutions and structures around the state, so that we can also bring in more and be really conscious of the equity part of how we do that. So equity is not something additional. It is like what we just do, and it's just built into the system and structural parts of capital investment. So good morning, everyone.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Next, we have Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I am Nels Pearson. I represent a large part of Olmsted County, which is the county that the city of Rochester is in. I also represent towns like Stuartville, Minnesota, Eota, Dover, parts of Chatfield, the best part of Chatfield, as opposed to the folks that are in Greg Davids' district. Those poor people, I hope they don't get redistricted in my district in the redistricting cycle, just based on how much I've trash talked them and how bad Greg Davids' district is. But I'm actually entering my fourth term in the legislature. My third term on the Capital Investment Committee. I've been honored to get many of the projects that we need in our community in the bill, but more importantly, getting all of the needs of folks throughout the state of Minnesota in these bills. So I'm honored with the work that we have done in the past and look forward to the work that we're doing in the future. I think much like the rest of the legislature, this committee is made up of, we're thrown in from all parts of the state and all walks of life. Many people would refer to that as strangers, but there's a old adage hanging in the wall of my mother's farmhouse in Butterfield, Minnesota, still to this day, and it just simply says, there are no strangers here, only friends we haven't met yet. And I feel very strongly that this committee does a great job of getting to know each other and realizing we are all friends here in the state of Minnesota, and that when we work together, we can get an outstanding outcome. So I appreciate serving and look forward to all of the work that we have in front of us.
Thank you, Representative Pearson. I appreciate the words that you have about us working together. Next, we have Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Chair Lee. My name is Donald Raleigh. I represent Anoka County and Washington County and the great cities of Lexington, Circle Pines, Lionel Lakes, Blaine, Centerville, and Hugo. And I'm looking forward to being on this committee, learning more about each one of you. And I do have my travel log ready so that as we travel around the state, I am ready to go.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh. Next, we have Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. My name is Jordan Rasmussen, and I represent most of Otter Tail County, about 11 cities and towns up in Otter Tail County. My predecessor, Representative Bud Nornes, highly recommended I work to get on the Capital Investment Committee, and so I'm very honored to be serving with each of you. I would say that the aspect I'm looking most forward to is, this committee is making investments in Minnesota on behalf of Minnesotans. And so I look forward to working with Chair Lee, Lead Erdahl, and the rest of you to make sure that Minnesotans are getting a good return on that investment and that they can be proud of the decisions that we're making. And so honored to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Next, we have Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everybody. This was actually one of my top committee choices, so I'm glad to be here. I represent 51B, which is the eastern part of Eagan. And let me tell you a little why I'm so pleased to be here. First of all, because I see this committee as a way for us to work statewide and understand each other better, get to know each other better, and weave together across some of our divisions. And I also see it as a chance to carefully and intentionally advance our goals for equity and for protecting and looking out for our climate. So thank you, glad to be here.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Next, we have Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not been on this committee before, but I've been sitting next to Dean Erdahl ever since I got elected in my first term. So it's only a matter of time before I made it here. Happy to be here. I represent Blaine. I'm the only Republican who only represents one city, which is super convenient when you're talking. You don't need a list like a dozen cities. And it's also the smallest district represented by a Republican, which I thought Frankie's would be smaller, but it isn't. So that is my little neat thing. And you'll probably hear me talk about Highway 65 a lot. You know, Highway 65 runs right through the heart of Blaine, straight north. And that is basically the worst road in the metro. So that is a big part of why I wanted to be on this committee. And I'm excited to get to work with all of you. It sounds like it'll be a lot of fun.
Thank you, Representative West. And my understanding is that Representative Zhang has not come on yet. And so we'll move over to our committee staff. First off, we have Ms. Chelsea Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chelsea Griffin. I am a legislative analyst with House Research. I am a new face for many of you. I was hired at the end of October by House Research to replace Deb Dyson, who retired in December. I'm very much looking forward to working with all of you over the course of the biennium. And it's a real pleasure and honor to serve in this capacity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Next, we have Mr. Andrew Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Andrew Lee. I work for nonpartisan House fiscal staff. So if you see a spreadsheet related to this committee, you'll probably see my name at the bottom of it. I'm happy to help with any questions you might have on fiscal matters. This will be my ninth session on capital investment, and I also staff the Transportation Committee. So look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Next, we have my committee, Legislative Assistant Joe Lincheski.
Hi, again, I'm Joe Lincheski, Representative Lee's committee legislative assistant. This is my second year on the bonding committee, and I'm just excited to work with you all and help the committee run smoothly.
Thank you, Mr. Lincheski. Next, we have Mr. Harry Miracle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Harry Miracle, working with the House GOP Research Department. It's It's my seventh session at the Capitol and third on capital investment.
Thank you, Mr. Miracle. Next, we have our committee administrator, Ms. Jenny Nash.
Good morning. I'm looking forward to working with everyone as the committee administrator, and I've worked on and off with the Capital Investment Committee as the committee administrator since 2007. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. And next, we have Ms. Jennifer Nelson.
I'm Jennifer Nelson. I'm the DFL researcher with this committee, and like many of you, I think I'm looking forward to getting to know you and learn more about the rest of the state. I am from Greater Minnesota, so I like especially watching everyone else get a chance to go out and see places maybe they've never even heard of before. But this is my third year with the committee. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. And so thank you, members and staff, for your introduction. I really look forward to working with all of you. And for our members, feel free to reach out anytime if there's anything that I could help with and you know that our staff could help with. And so right now, we're going to transition over to our bonding overview from Ms. Griffin and Mr. Lee, who will present their presentation jointly using the share screen function for their PowerPoint. And feel free to get started.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Chelsea Griffin, and I'm a legislative analyst with House Research. Today, I'll be presenting an overview of capital investment and state bonding, along with my colleague, Mr. Andy Lee from House Fiscal. This presentation is based in large part on the capital investment and bonding information brief published by House Research, and that was a part of your materials for committee today. I encourage you to use that document for future reference on this topic. Next slide. Before we dive into the material, Mr. Lee and I wanted to briefly discuss our analyst roles. Although we work for separate departments in the House of Representatives, there is a lot of overlap between the services that we provide. First, both types of analysts serve all members and committees of the House of Representatives. Second, our services are confidential and neutral. This means that any discussions you have with us on legislation stay confidential. We do not share information about our discussions without your explicit consent. By neutral, I mean that we provide information services. We get you information and facts so you have everything you need to make decisions. Third, we provide subject matter expertise. We are available for questions on our assigned subjects, both during and outside of committee. Our roles differ slightly during session. Legislative analysts are nonpartisan staff that assist with bill drafts and bill development, so that's the kind of thing that you would come to me for. We staff committees, we conduct research on topics that you may want to learn more about, and during the interim, we draft and update publications and staff any relevant interim committees. I'll briefly turn it over to Mr. Lee to discuss the role of fiscal analysts.
Thank you again, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. So the fiscal staff mostly during session helps members when they have bills that have fiscal impacts request fiscal notes. So that's estimates from the executive branch on how much bills will cost. In this committee, there aren't too many fiscal notes because most projects have a named dollar amount. But we also work with committee chairs or minority leads to come up with, in this case, bonding proposals and bills as those move through the process of negotiations. So during interim, fiscal staff does publications and also staffs interim committees and potentially is with you on the bonding tours as well.
All right, thank you, Mr. Lee. Next slide. So now on to bonding. What is a bond? A municipal bond can be defined as a debt security issued by states, cities, counties, and other governmental entities. Bonds are issued to finance capital projects, such as buildings, roads, and sewer systems. If the government issuing the bonds agrees to repay the bondholders the principal and interest in the time specified, and sometimes the interest paid to the bondholders is tax exempt. Next slide. Bonds can be distinguished by a number of factors, as you can see on this slide. The first three bullet points are what you will likely hear the most about in committee. So which government entity is the issuer? Is it the state? Is it a municipality? A special district? What is the purpose for issuing the bonds? Transportation, buildings, sewer, these are just examples.
And then the source of payment is, are we talking about the issuance of general obligation bonds, revenue bonds, possibly appropriation bonds? These are all things that, that you will likely cover in committee over the course of the biennium. The last five bullet points, maturity structure, price, tax status, rate, and term, these are all additional ways that you can distinguish bonds or categorize them. But for the purpose of this presentation, I won't be going into the details on those specific topics. Next slide. There are three primary sources of legal authority for bonding. The state constitution, specifically Article 11, provides authority for state general obligation bonding. The Minnesota statutes, in particular, Chapter 16A, and federal law. So for example, IRS regulations govern whether interest is taxable or tax exempt. Next slide. State general obligation bonds. These bonds are backed by the full faith, credit, and taxing powers of the state of Minnesota. So this basically means that the state is putting its full financial weight behind these bonds. If the state for some reason could not make the payments, the Constitution requires that the state auditor levy a statewide property tax to pay the bonds. To date, fortunately, this has not occurred. To be eligible for state general obligation bond funding, specific criteria must be met. The Constitution requires that the funds be used for a public purpose, and a public purpose that can be defined as that the expenditure is reasonably expected to achieve a legitimate public goal or benefit. Use must be authorized in the state constitution, and I will cover what those authorized uses are in the next few slides. It must be specified in law. So you'll notice when we're working on a draft of a rider for a project that is to receive state general obligation funding, it uses very specific language. It'll talk about pre-design, design, construction, for example, and this is to ensure that this constitutional requirement is met. And finally, the bonds must mature in no more than 20 years. Lastly, on the slide, any bill that contains a provision that includes a project that's receiving a state general obligation bond funding, that bill must originate in the House of Representatives. Next slide. Bonds to acquire and better public land and buildings. So here we're talking about capital projects, and this is the principal purpose for which bonds are issued. A capital project is a project that is long-lived, so that's at least 10 years. And it's for a fixed asset. So a building is a good example of that. The project must be publicly owned to qualify for general obligation bond funding. And a bill that contains a provision using general obligation bonds to fund a capital project, it must pass with a 3/5 vote, or sometimes called a supermajority vote, of the Minnesota House and Senate. Next slide. The Minnesota Constitution states a number of other authorized uses for general obligation bond funding, and these are listed here. You can see that these uses have grown over time, with the earliest being in 1857 to repel invasion and suppress insurrection, and the most recent addition being in 1982 to improve and rehabilitate public or private railroad rights of way and other rail facilities up to $200 million par value. But like I mentioned, most of the discussion around general obligation bond funding will be for capital projects, but these are other ways that general obligation bonds could be used. Next slide. So some final miscellaneous topics before I hand the presentation over to Mr. Lee. General obligation bonds are not used to reimburse for work that's already paid for. And this is due to federal tax law and the use of tax-exempt bond proceeds to reimburse costs. You may hear the phrase bond counsel a lot in the bonding world. Bond counsel are public finance attorneys that provide opinions on whether something is bondable. The attorney general retains bond counsel to provide opinions on the tax status of state general obligation bonds for the state of Minnesota. The third bullet point is a reminder that there are restrictions on state bond finance property, even if only a small part of the project was financed with state bonds. Those restrictions aren't permanent. They do disappear after a time period equal to 125% of the useful life of the project is passed or until the property is sold as provided by law. A reminder about non-state match. So this is a statutory requirement. So it's section 16A.502. There must be a commitment of resources to finish the project as described in the rider. So you might see language in the rider to the effect of the bond proceeds are available after the commissioner management budget determines that an amount sufficient to complete the project has been committed to the project. That's just to ensure that that statutory requirement is met. And finally, I have a chart here comparing state general obligation bonding and local general obligation bonding. There are differences between the two. On referendum requirement, so local GO bonding requires the approval of the voters usually. There are some exceptions, but generally it has to be before the voters. There isn't a similar requirement for state general obligation bonding. Limits on net debt. There are limits in statute, specifically section 475.53, that put limits on net debt for local units of government. The state actually doesn't have a similar net debt limits. There are guidelines, which Mr. Lee will discuss in his portion of the presentation, but those guidelines aren't statutory and they're not in the Constitution. I mentioned the public ownership requirement for state GO bonding. There is not a similar requirement for local general obligation bonding. So for example, local general obligation tax increment finance bonds can be used for privately owned projects. And finally, like I had mentioned, the purposes for which state general obligation bonds can be used are specified in the Minnesota Constitution. The Constitution does not address local government obligation bonding. The local governments, they're creatures of the state, and they only have the authority granted to them by law or implied by an express grant of authority. The legislature actually decides whether local governments can issue bonds and for what purposes. And the legislature has actually authorized local governments to issue GO bonds for things that wouldn't be eligible for state general obligation bonding. Some examples of this are vehicles and information technology infrastructure. And with that, I will hand over the presentation to Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Mr. Chair, members again, my name is Andrew Lee. I'll be covering the finance parts of this presentation. So briefly, most of the focus of this committee and of this presentation is on general obligation bonding, but there are also other common funds and different kinds of financing in bonding bills. It includes the general fund, so that's a direct appropriation from the state general fund. Revenue bonds, those are things that are backed by different revenue streams. So one example would be parking rates for a parking ramp. An example of sort of a revenue bond slash user financing arrangement is with the Minnesota State System. Some of their capital projects are supported by tuition and other school revenue streams. There's also appropriation bonds, which are backed by the general fund and are similar to GO bonds, but they don't have the full faith and credit requirement of GO bonds, and they also don't have the supermajority requirement, and they've been used for things that aren't GO eligible in the past. And I'll get into that in a little bit. There's also agency bonds.
Mr. Lee, real quickly, we have a hand from Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It can also wait till the end of their presentation. I was just trying to get in the queue for questions. Whatever you prefer. I could also ask it now.
You could go right now.
Well, I was just surprised by the portion of Ms. Griffin's presentation that said bonding can be used to control an insurrection. I mean, and just given current events, I sort of feel an obligation to ask how would that work? I mean, you tend not to. Based on recent experience, that can happen really suddenly. Would bonding money be used to prepare to prevent it, or can it be used after the fact to repair places or install additional security measures? I guess I was just curious how that provision would be put into use.
Ms. Griffin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, that's a good question. I am not quite sure about the history of this provision and exactly, you know, how it would practically work for authorization of general obligation bonds, but I'm happy to look into that for you and get back to you.
Sure.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed, Mr. Lee.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. So then moving on to some other examples of financing and bonding bills, lease purchase and lease financing agreements for purchasing of buildings or equipment. Many cases, equipment can't be financed with GO bonds unless it's part of an entire building renovation. And there's also credit enhancement programs. So that's where the state is issuing debt on behalf of a local unit of government because the state will carry a better interest rating, but the local unit of government pays the state the debt service costs. So it essentially saves money in terms of interest. After four years of an authorization of a capital project, so a GO bond or a general fund appropriation, unless the legislature extends the authorization, if the money hasn't been spent or encumbered or is under contract, then under statute, the 16A.642, that authorization cancels. So an example of this is if legislature authorizes bonds for a project, and after 4 years, the project doesn't move forward or doesn't get matching funds, then that project will cancel. And these cancellations happen they're reflected in terms of debt service savings because the state won't need to issue the debt for the project in the November forecast, but they're first recognized in January with the cancellation report. And then very quickly, some other issuers of state debt, who issues state debt, I should say, Minnesota Management and Budget conducts all the bond sales and manages the bond proceeds. So when money needs to go to projects, MMB is the one responsible for making sure that that the grant agreements are signed and that the project meets the criteria that's laid out in the authorizing legislation. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency also issues debt in form of appropriation bonds and some other debt products that we'll get into a little bit later. The University of Minnesota issues debt, as does these other state entities. The ones that the committee most pays attention to is MMB, Housing Finance, and then issues debt on behalf of some of these other ones. We'll get into that in just a little bit. So the capital investment guidelines are a policy that MMB has had over the years in different forms to limit the amount of state debt. The current iteration of these guidelines came about in 2009. And I should stress it isn't law, it's not in the Constitution, it's a policy that MMB sets and that they could change. And what this limit imposes is that principal outstanding, so that's the total amount of debt that is that's out there that has been sold, shall not exceed 3.25% of state personal income. And so state personal income as the denominator is a macroeconomic number that is all estimated, all income of every person in the state. And that's generated by a consulting company that works with MMB to come up with economic forecasts. So MMB in their presentation on Thursday is gonna get into this in a little bit more detail, but I just wanted to introduce the committee to sort of the concept here. There's three guidelines. The first one is the total principal outstanding, can't exceed 3.25% of state personal income. The second one is that moral obligations, so that's things where the state hasn't specifically pledged money to back these debt products, but is potentially on the hook for them. Those are things that MHFA, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, debt products that they use for mortgage financing, and also leases and debt that has been authorized but not yet issued, And that limit, the second limit, it cannot exceed 6% of state personal income. So that's a larger number. And then the final, the third bullet point in the third guideline is that 40% of GO debt has to be paid off within 5 years and 70% within 10 years. And this basically ensures the maturity structure of state debt such that all debt, all GO debt is paid off within 20 years. And there's a few exceptions where there's some longer term debts that are appropriation bonds, and I'll get into that a little bit later. And this is just a primer. MMB is going to get into the guidelines a little bit more on Thursday. So committee accounts. So this is what areas of general fund spending the committee has jurisdiction over. It includes debt service, obviously, for the general obligation debt. It does not include the trunk highway debt service, trunk highway bonds, and I should explain the trunk highway system is all state roads. So that's interstates, U.S. highways, and highways that have the Minnesota symbol. Those are supported by constitutionally dedicated trunk highway revenues. So that's things like the gas tax, the motor vehicle sales tax, and the registration tax. And those are not included in the capital investment target. They're included in the transportation target in my other committee. And if there's questions, I can get into a little bit more detail on that. Then the next part of the committee account are capital projects. So that those are either one-time general fund spending, as was mentioned earlier, or debt service for appropriation bonds. And I'll show you how this looks on some spreadsheets in just a little bit here. So I'm going to get into the various spreadsheets that the committee will be looking at a lot of. And just really quickly, you have this presentation. And so these are some other resources for if you want to do some more research. So I'm going to switch gears really quickly to an example of a recently passed bonding bill. This is just to give you a sense of what bonding bill spreadsheets look like. So this was the bill that was passed and signed into law in October of last year. As you look from the left to right, it has the project name and the agency that's being granted to it. So you can see the University of Minnesota is the first. And then the fund type, so GO is general obligation debt, and then the amount. So you can see the total for University of Minnesota was $75.3 million. And then you can see Minnesota State, the MinSKU system, formerly the MinSKU system, with the GO amount and then some user financing. So this is where part of the project is financed by state general obligation debt and part is financed by the revenues from the Minnesota State system. So that's tuition, donations, and things like that. I'm not going to go through this whole spreadsheet. It's 12 pages. I'll just point on some things to look through when you're going through these spreadsheets. I highlight because they tend to be less common than general obligation projects when there's some other funding source. So you can see here on line 97, the local road wetland replacement program had $8 million in general fund. And for equipment for the Minnesota Department of Health and Agriculture had $779,000 in general fund appropriation for equipment. So these were things that were not necessarily eligible for GO bonds. And then just scroll down here very quickly. Towards the bottom of the spreadsheet, you can see where there's separate articles. So in the bill that passed in October, there was an article specific to authorized trunk highway bonds. You see that here. And then there was a separate article for general fund appropriations over and above the general fund appropriations in the rest of the bill. And then there was an additional article authorizing appropriation bonds. You can see that there. And then at the very bottom of the spreadsheet is a total. And so you can see the amounts that are supported by general fund or GO obligations are on line 432 and 433. And then user financing, general fund, trunk highway, and appropriation bonds for a grand total for the bill is about $1.8 billion. And then the amount that is general fund supported GO debt. And then there were cancellations, and then there's a net total. And we'll get into that more when bills come up, but that's sort of how to read a capital investment tracking spreadsheet. And I'm always happy to answer questions at any time. Then in terms of how much the state pays in debt service, so this is that committee account part of the ledger, this spreadsheet that you should also have in your packet shows the amount of debt service, but also the amount of principal outstanding for various state debts. So the first line, line 4, general obligation debt service, you can see is around $631 million in the upcoming fiscal year 2022. And then for the biennium, that's what is the column here that is shaded, it'll total about $1.2 billion in debt service over the two-year budgeting cycle that the legislature will be budgeting for in this session. And then going further out, this is the total amount of principal of GO debt that's outstanding. So it's about $4.2 billion. And then the amount of debt that has been authorized but has not yet been sold by MMB because the projects aren't ready to go yet, but will probably be sold in the next few years, is about $1.87 billion for a total of about $6 billion. And then on lines 8 through 17, you can see the various mostly appropriation bond debts. Those include things like Minnesota Housing Finance Agency as an appropriation bond. So the debt is still paid by the general fund. You can see it is about $51 million for the biennium. You can see that on line 8. And the total outstanding and authorized but not yet sold debt for MHFA is about $400 million. And you can see that on the far right end of line 8. And these are projects that mostly financed housing projects owned by nonprofits. And so they would not be eligible for GO bonds. And then you can see two University of Minnesota appropriation bond debts for the TCF Bank Stadium and the biomedical facilities. You can see that all of that principal outstanding has been issued, so now it's just being paid back over the life of the debt. Line 11 is a result of, in 2011, the state had about a $5 billion deficit. And part of the solution to that deficit that the legislature enacted and the governor signed into law was issuing debt to essentially plug a budget hole that was securitizing the revenue stream that the state got from the tobacco settlement in the late 1990s. That debt has since been reissued as appropriation bond debt at a lower interest rate. And so this, what line 11 is paying back the debt incurred to essentially plug that one-time budget deficit in 2011. And then on line 12, you can see the Viking Stadium project. This is an appropriation bond. There are revenue streams that are attached to the legislation that authorized the Viking Stadium, but it flows into the general fund, and then the general fund is liable to pay the debt service. So as far as the capital investment target goes, it's sort of irrelevant how the money gets there. It's still paid by the whole general fund. And then there's Lewis and Clark Water Project. As was mentioned in introductions earlier, this is a project in southwestern Minnesota. The Duluth Regional Exchange is a project around a few hospital complexes in Duluth. And then lines 15, 16, and 17 are appropriation bond debts that were just authorized in the 2020 fifth special session bonding bill. And so you can see there, the bonds have not been let yet. And then there's a few other debts that count towards the overall state guideline capacity, but are outside the jurisdiction of capital investment. And they're mostly lease purchase agreements for buildings and include the BCA, Ag and Health Laboratory Building, and DHS Building. Those two were built and owned by the St. Paul Port Authority, but the state is essentially paying rent to own for those two buildings. And then the Senate Office Building has a what's called a certificate of participation, where the Senate operating appropriation pays the Department of Administration, which pays MMB, which pays the debt service for that building. As you can see, the principal outstanding on that is about $70 million.
So we have a question from Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Lee, would you explain why we do appropriation bonds instead of general obligation bonds in some cases? What are the advantages of doing appropriation bonds in that way?
Mr. Lee.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl. So appropriation bonds don't have the geo requirements of public ownership or all the supermajority vote requirements. In specific to MHFA's case, they're housing projects that are owned, or housing buildings that are owned by nonprofits and not a public entity, not a city, not the state. And so appropriation bonds can be used to finance construction of those or upkeep of those, whereas geo bonds could not. In some other cases, particularly for the Viking Stadium, I think it gets into uses of whether or not that would be geo eligible, in particular to the 2011 deficit, that's the state appropriation refunding bonds. You couldn't use geo bonds to essentially pay for a one-time budget shortfall. And so this was a different financing mechanism to account for that. As far as the buildings, there are a number of times where geo bonds could have been used for state buildings because they would meet public ownership requirements. But for whatever reason, the legislature decided to do another route and use appropriation bonds or lease purchase agreements to fulfill those. I hope I answered the question there, Representative Erdahl.
Yes. Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, and Mr. Lee, thank you for your explanation. I think, in summary, Mr. Lee, you're saying that this enables public-private partnerships to go forward regarding especially housing projects.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, yes, that's correct. When the public doesn't have to own what is being built with the appropriation bonds.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at the non-capital investment debt, like the Ag Health building, the DHS building, some of those public buildings that are leased to own. And it's my understanding that they still, until they're completely purchased, they are private entities, so they do pay property taxes. So that would help out the local government. Because they're not taking those properties off the tax roll until they become completely publicly owned. Is that a correct analysis?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I'll have to double check on that. I believe they're currently owned by the St. Paul Port Authority. And I would think that since the Port Authority is a public entity, I think that they are also tax exempt, but I will double check on that. I can find that out pretty quickly.
Representative Hansen?
And a follow-up, Ms. Chair Lee.
Go ahead, Representative Hansen.
Most of our bonding legislation or constitutional requirements here have been set for some time prior to computerization, frankly. So, it's my understanding that we cannot bond for technology because of the 20-year cycle. When I look at the history of changes to capital investment criteria in the Constitution, when cars came, we added highways. When forestry became recognized as a big industry, we added that in for reforestation when that need was there. So I'm wondering, is it possible to adapt to bond for technology? Because it doesn't appear that any of our existing, whether it's appropriation bonds or that, are quite the exact fit for computer servers, hardware, software, any of those type of things. So that's my question. How do we deal with technology and adapting the Constitution to the 21st century?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair, members of Hansen, I'll have to do a little bit of research. I think there was a, not a bond council opinion, but a memo relating to specifically fiber optic technology. Equipment such as technology can be replaced if it is part of a major, if like an entire building is being gutted. But if it, you know, short of that, I don't think that that geo bonds could be used simply for technology. This would also probably be a good question for MMB on Thursday as well, but I'll look into it also.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Please proceed.
So then just one more note on this spreadsheet. So trunk highway bonds also count towards the total debt that counts against guideline one, and that you can see that on line 29 here. It's about $2 billion that is currently authorized, or that has been is sold in this principal, and about $1.3 billion that is yet to be sold. And so you can see the total principal outstanding is about $7.8 billion tax-supported debt, and then about $11 billion is the combination of both the sold and the authorized but not yet sold. And so very quickly, here is a pie chart showing kind of the relative scope of debt. You can see GO bonds make up the majority, then MHFA, the U of M, the deficit 2011 deficit related, what was then the tobacco bonds and is now general fund appropriation refunding bonds, the Viking Stadium, then all other appropriation bonds, and about 30% of overall state tax supported debt, both authorized or and unsold, and principal outstanding is trunk highway bonds. And that is the conclusion of my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your presentation, Mr. Lee. I just have one question. In the earlier presentation, it was said that there were levels 3.25% of total state personal income and so forth. Do we track where we are in terms of the information on this last spreadsheet where the 7.8 billion and the 11.241 billion are in terms of hitting that threshold so that we know, are we really pushing it and at the edge of what we can incur as debt, or that we are really being maybe underutilizing? I'd just like a calibration on where we are vis-a-vis our thresholds. Thank you.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ryer, yes, and I didn't want to steal MMB's thunder because they'll be doing some of this presentation on Thursday, but MMB, with every budget and economic forecast, so one comes out in November and another comes out in February, also produces a debt capacity report. I think that'll probably be part of the presentation materials for Thursday. Just very quickly, the state personal income estimate number is about $344.2 billion. And so the total state debt that is applying to guideline one is about $11.2 billion. And that accounts for about, let me make sure I get this right. So the maximum additional capacity in guideline one, so that's principal that has been authorized and is sold and is outstanding, is about $3.37 billion as of the November forecast. One thing to note with that number is it is static because the legislature can issue debt, but it may take many years for that debt to actually be sold. Because essentially, like, once a bonding bill passes, the MMB doesn't just sell all the debt for that bonding bill. It waits for all of those projects to have specific needs, and that can take many years. And in fact, with trunk highway bonds, in a large authorization that occurred in 2008, it was authorized over 10 years. So it can take quite a long time to actually issue the debt. And so MMB also has a separate estimate for how much maximum additional debt capacity could be issued in this year to hit that guideline, if that makes sense. And I don't want to steal their thunder because I think they can explain it a little bit better than I can, but you'll be getting a little bit more detail on that.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Lee.
Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, earlier you talked about the projects that are canceled. So on average, how many projects are canceled every year, and about how much savings is that?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abaje, so that depends a lot by when a bonding bill is issued or is authorized. It takes 4 years to that. If it's a very large bonding bill, it'll be 4 years after that if there's a lot of projects that haven't moved forward for large amounts to be canceled. So it kind of is, it's not so much an annual average. It varies based off of when the most recent bonding bill was, if that makes sense. So it's up and down. Oftentimes, project sponsors will know that their four-year window is coming up. And so if they don't have the matching funds yet, they will ask the legislature to extend the authorization. So you don't see large projects canceling that often, although it does happen. And more often, it's not whole projects canceling, but little bits and pieces. So it'll be like an unneeded $53,000, and it does get down to like the dollar amount for those things. But I'd be happy to share with the committee the cancellation report, and you can kind of get a sense of what those look like, because one just came out this January. But I guess the short answer is it varies quite a bit.
Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any additional members' questions for Mr. Lee or Ms. Griffin? All right, so hearing no other questions, I believe Representative Zhang have joined us. Representative Zhang, why don't you introduce yourself and the district that you represent?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jay Hyung. I proudly serve the southeast portion of our capital city. Looking forward to working with all of you.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. And so hearing no other questions for Mr. Lee and Ms. Griffin, we can adjourn early. I do want to let you all know that on Thursday, we'll be hearing from MMB on the August bond sale and the November debt capacity report. And also just to let you know that next week, you have may seen that email from Ms. Jenny Nash around having some hearings on corrections. My understanding is that right now, because of the backlog with the revisor's office, some members may not be able to introduce their bills on time for next week, but don't worry about that. We're still going to proceed with having some hearings on the corrections bill that are being requested, and hopefully we could get our members who have bills that want to get jacketed can get it jacketed in February. We'll find a time to hear additional corrections then. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, by corrections, you mean problems that happened in the October bill?
Correct, Madam Chair. So members
not
have
the
been-
department.
Correct, Madam Chair. Not the Department of Corrections, but issues that were raised to you, Chair Murphy, back in October. And many of you may have heard from other members and from other local units of government was some issues, some technical corrections that they want to make to their project that was passed in October, and so we're planning to hear those next week.
And if anyone hasn't already checked with their city on their project, please do so with the city engineer and make sure that their project is still in order.
Yeah, so thank you for that comment, Vice Chair Murphy. I do encourage all of you to continue to reach out to your local city engineers if you have any local projects that were passed in October to see if we could get those bills introduced and have those hearings early on so that we could set ourselves up to help out our local communities who are in dire need of these projects. And so seeing no further questions, this meeting is adjourned.